Hello, this is Jason Polanski from the Capital Chapter, and you are listening to White Canes Connect.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 3 of White Canes Connect. My name is David Goldstein. I'm the treasurer of the Keystone Chapter of the National Federation of the Blind of Pennsylvania, and tonight we've got another look at hashtag NFB21, the national convention that took place a couple of weeks ago, this time from a different perspective, the perspective of the future leaders of the National Federation of the Blind. Joining me, as always, is co-host Lisa Bryant. Lisa, how are you tonight?
Hey, David, I am doing excellent, and I'm looking so forward to this other side of the coin. Last week, we talked to the old school, the veterans, Jim and Connie, who gave some great history and remembrances of, you know, conventions over their 30 some years of convention going. And now, you know, the younger generation. We have Addison and Lizzie sharing. They are the scholarship recipients of this year. Addison won the $3,000 scholarship, and Lizzie received the Jernigan Memorial, which was a $12,000 scholarship. So getting that new perspective, I think, is will be a great balance to last week's episode.
Yeah, it really will be. And I'm sure by the end, we will see some comparisons and draw some comparisons to both Addison and Lizzie. Obviously, Lizzie is a little further along. Addison's just 17 years old, but let's get to the interview. So we've heard from veterans of past conventions. Now we have someone who is new to the NFB National Convention, and her name is Addison Lemon. Addison, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And this was your first convention this year?
Yes.
Okay. And and what'd you think?
I had a lot of fun, and it was very inspiring, and I was very excited I got to attend. It was a lot of information I got out of it, a lot of good resources.
Hi, Addison. It's so nice to have you on. Before we get into, because we're going to really kind of probe you for more about, you know, what in particular kind of tickled your fancy, but tell us about you. You know, you are one of the scholarship finalist winners. Tell us about your background, where you hail from. Feel free if you want to share more about your blindness journey, and then, you know, kind of tell us how you even came to the NFB.
Okay, well, I am 17 years old, and I come from Latrobe, Pennsylvania. It's a small town about 45 minutes outside of Pittsburgh. My eye diagnosis is aniridia, which means that I do not have an iris. I also have nystagmus and glaucoma. I'm thankful enough right now that glaucoma does not affect my vision. I also have really bad light sensitivity, and I am completely night blind. Otherwise, my vision acuity is probably about 20/200. So I'm one of the lucky people when it comes to that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's one thing that, you know, some folks, I found at least, you know, both Lisa and I also have a little bit of sight, but some folks kind of make it sound like, well, you really shouldn't rely on any of your vision. You know, as you'll see, doing different things, use every tool that you can. You know, if you don't have a hammer and you got to knock something back into the ground, if you have a pot, you use a pot, same thing. You might not have great vision, but use what you have and what you can, you know, to get by.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how did you first get involved with the NFB?
I've been involved with the NFB since I was young, just not as involved as I currently am. I've attended two state conventions before when I was younger, so nothing I really remember at this time because I was like 11 when the last convention was that I attended. And this is my first national convention. Mm-hmm. So when I was in kindergarten, I attended a Catholic school and they refused to teach me Braille. So I had to move to a public school, and they also didn't want to teach me Braille, but the NFB came and saved the day and encouraged them to teach me Braille. So I did get taught Braille at a young age. I do not currently use it. I use a lot of assistive technology, but it's just something I've continued to kind of refresh myself with. So I have it as a resource in my back pocket just in case my vision does decrease as I get older.
Yeah. Now that is quite a story right there about how NFB kind of came to your defense. Now, did that start at a local level and then move up to a national level?
I honestly am not sure because my parents really dealt with that. I mean, as a kindergartner, I did not know any of this.
Oh, you were, this is a kindergartner. Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember any, I didn't like none of this. I was not aware of any of this until probably about recently when my parents and I were just talking about my involvement with the NFB and how I wanted to get more involved. And that's when my parents brought it up that this happened. And I was like, oh, that's cool to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you affiliated with a particular chapter?
I am not. No, I was going to start to get affiliated after the national convention here, but I'm probably going to just have to do the Pennsylvania at large chapter because where I live, there's not a chapter near me.
Okay. Okay.
Right. And that's so Jigsaw is the one that you'll hop in with. Is that right? Jigsaw?
I think so.
Okay.
So let's get back to this convention. So this was a virtual experience. I'm sure you've, let me not assume. Have you been doing, Have you been doing online education during the pandemic? So you've kind of gotten used to the virtual world?
Yes, my school is very fortunate enough they tried to keep us hybrid or in person as much as they could. But unfortunately, we did have a death within our school. We had a secretary pass away. So that kind of was our final straw where we did have to go online. We went online for about 2 months. And then after Christmas break and everything, we spent a little more time online. But then around January 20th, they decided they were going to have us come back. They decided they were going to have us come hybrid for 2 weeks and then full in person. And we actually were lucky enough to stay full in person for the rest of the school year.
Oh.
So I did have my share of experience of online learning. I can tell you it was horrible.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. I don't know too many people that have a lot of positive things to say about virtual learning, including educators.
And it's so hard. And, you know, kids had, you know, some kids, I guess, thrived by it. The ones who are, you know, introverted and, you know, don't like to be around a lot of people. But for the most part, you know, it was tough on just about everyone.
Yeah.
So getting back to the convention being virtual, what was that like? Did it have a distinction of being something a little more fun than just kind of being on another Zoom? Just tell us more about how it flowed for you. Did you feel, well, there's nothing that beats face-to-face, but did you feel more connected than just kind of a talking head on on a computer?
I certainly did. I mean, I was lucky enough with being a scholarship winner that we had some certain events where we got to sit down with the committee and sit down and have a talk with them. We did what they called a scholarship breakfast where they just got to ask us questions about ourselves and we got to answer them, or they did the round robin. I keep wanting to call Red Robin, but it's the round robin. And they would basically ask us scenarios and we would have to answer them based on how we would handle the situation. So it was really nice to like get to know my other scholarship winners through those answers, as well as, you know, connect with the committee a lot. So it was nice, you know, to have a conversation with those people and get in depth with that. And, you know, there was only the committee and the scholarship, so there's probably about 60 people, which seems like a lot of people, but they also had us in small breakout rooms. They had about 6 breakout rooms. So it was probably maybe 10 people per breakout room. Mm-hmm. So you really got that connection with people. And I know the voting was still really cool, getting to be able to participate. I got to participate in the NABS voting as well as the National Organization of Blind Educators. And they also created some social spaces for us, like between events or late at night, where the scholarship finalists got to go and just hang out together. And sometimes the committee members would pop in, and it was so nice. It was a great connection thing. I mean, and it was also fun because we had some fun activities. Like sometimes I forget what event it was, but they asked us, they go, if you could be an in-home object, what would it be? And so then a convention, you can do that, but like, you don't really think about it. When you're sitting at home, you like look at the first thing and you're like, oh, that.
Yeah. So what was yours?
mine, I forget what my first answer was, but my second answer was like, I wanted to be a spatula. I said, I don't know why, but he's calling me from my kitchen.
That's funny.
That is funny. Now, were you able to connect with folks that you will meet up again later once you go off to college, or anybody have anything in comparison to you school-wise or location-wise once you head off to school?
I know that I had a friend going in there. Her name is Kaylee Brendel. She, she's been involved with the NFB for a while. She's from New Jersey. She's actually going to be coming to Pennsylvania for school. So we got to build a more of a stronger relationship throughout the convention. We were texting each other all the time, chatting about it. And it was really nice to bond over that. As well as I met some other friends who were in my group. I know I actually spent on the phone two hours today with my new friend, Peter. He actually has the same condition I do, and we both have a really rare condition. So just getting to meet each other from that was really cool. And then just a couple other people I've reached out with since, and there's some parents on there. So connections I can make if I ever have kids. And a lot of the committee members have been really willing. They're like, please text me, call me if you have any problems or you have any questions in the future. So, and some of them have already made plans to connect with me already later in this month.
Okay. Oh, that's great. And that's, I think that's one great thing about the NFB. You know, when you're sitting at home and your family doesn't understand what's going on and that you can't see that, and you have somebody, especially now with the one that has the same condition. I mean, it's great to be able to say, hey, this happened to me today. Did this ever happen to you? And you go back and forth and, you know, maybe he's had something and found a little bit of a workaround or, you know, something to do. And it's just good to be with people that get, you know, what you're going through.
Yeah, I agree, David. I always think of our get-togethers, either locally or nationally, is like, I kind of breathe a sigh of relief. I feel like I'm coming in someplace from, you know, inside from the cold, cruel world out there, you know, with people who understand us. So Addison, you were one of our scholarship finalists. Tell us about your award. What you are planning to do, and then where are you going to study and what you're studying?
I can't remember what the specific scholarship I did win, but it was one of the $3,000 ones. It was the first one that was announced. It's the one they give a lot of. I can't remember the name.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who are probably listening probably know which one it is. I don't, but I'm still very grateful for the opportunity just to participate in the scholarship class and to be able to get the, I think it's $6,000 that I'm getting out of it. So that's really amazing.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm actually going to be attending Robert Morris University for early childhood and special education. I have big goals to help make a difference in the education system, especially the public education system for kids who are blind or visually impaired, or just who have a disability in general and who want to go in the into regular education classroom instead of being put in the special education classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So make accommodations for them to be able to learn with their peers. There's no reason if they just need a few accommodations, maybe, you know, if they need to sit by themselves and they learn better one-on-one, then maybe they need to be put in the special education classroom. But if they just need some assistive technology, or a couple breaks here and there, there's no reason they cannot be put in the regular education classroom. And a lot of teachers just need to be taught how to accommodate their students and that it's okay to accept them and to not make a big deal amongst their peers.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you ready to make that same kind of fight for yourself going into college? Have you already sort of made the request of what kind of accommodation? Because I'm sure you probably have done some initial work in that area, but it may be something that you may have to do again and again and again. How prepared do you feel for that?
I feel very prepared. I've been advocating basically by myself and for myself since 10th grade.
Good for you.
Which seems like a short time. It's only been 2 years because I did graduate early. But I really struggled in ninth grade because at that time I had my vision teacher advocating for me and my parents advocating for me. But then I had a big issue where I went through 7 different vision teachers.
Hmm.
And that's a long story.
In 1 year,
I went through 7 different vision teachers. So I really had to learn that I needed to know what I needed.
Yeah.
So I could communicate with my teachers, because the next thing I knew, I had to update a new vision teacher about everything I needed. And then at that point, they were still getting used to, you know, what I needed, so that they didn't even have time to advocate for me. So I had to step up and do it myself. Hmm. And I mean, it was hard, but I learned very quickly how to do it, how to do it in a very respectful manner. Especially during online learning this year, I had a lot of difficulties with my public school teachers not wanting to give me hard copies of work or anything, because I struggle sitting on the computer for a long period of time. I think it's my nystagmus or something like that, or the light sensitivity. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but I get a headache so easily from just sitting and staring at the computer screen. Mm-hmm. So I would ask if teachers could either email me handouts ahead of time, or that they could send it to the special education director and she would print them out and bring them to my house, but teachers would still like make a big deal about it and wouldn't send it to me ahead of time, or they would just, you know, they would be very difficult about it. And so mm-hmm. It was like the middle of December. I actually had to go into the school and sit down with all my teachers in front of them and say, like, look, you guys aren't accommodating me. It was a very scary thing to have to sit down in front of mm-hmm. all of your high school teachers and right. say, look, you're not doing your job.
But that that very well could be your training ground for,
And that's where, I think that's really forward. When I learned that's what I needed to do, is to help advocate for especially younger students, because I want to go into the early childhood, to advocate for students who don't know how to advocate for themselves yet. You know, mm-hmm. teach them how to advocate for themselves, as well as teach the teachers how to advocate for their students.
Yeah.
Right. And that's such a big thing with, you know, especially, going down the line as you get a little bit younger than you, you know, kids are afraid to, you know, that teacher is the end all be all of the classroom. That's the leader of the classroom. You know, how am I supposed to go up to them and say, hey, I need this, or, you know, I can't do that. I have to do it this way. And, you know, that could be terrifying to some kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, it sounds like you're getting your training wheels on, because I'm sure that you'll probably have to do a lot of that self-advocating as you go into university. Do you plan on staying on campus, or you're commuting?
I'm planning on staying on campus. Yep.
Oh, good for you. Get the full experience.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yes.
Good for you.
I actually, I'm involved in their women's leadership program up at Robert Morris, as well as I'm in their color guard. So I'm moving in super early to do all that kind of stuff. So I'm already getting my foot in the door and getting involved in everything and meeting new people and all that already.
So I take it the school is fully everything. There's no hybrid anything. Everything is in person.
Thankfully, yes, they are going to be all full in person, and they've lifted all of their mask restrictions and everything. Nice. So I know they actually just recently did that, because when I started talking to the disability coordinator back, probably, I want to say I started talking to her in May, they at the time they were planning on doing hybrid. I mean, it's what, July now? That was 2 months ago. So right. A lot of things have changed since then. And that makes me really happy, because I was all worried that I struggled so bad, you know, my last year of high school with online learning. I was like, how am I going to do hybrid?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That is great.
Now, did you look at other schools, or did you know pretty much right off the bat you wanted to go there because of proximity to your house, or some other reasons? Did you look elsewhere?
Oh, yes, I did. I want to say I went on 12 college tours and applied to 15 schools. So wow. My parents sure were so excited when I finally committed.
I have to admit, though, I loved when my kids went to school. I loved looking at the different colleges. And were you able to actually go on the tours at the schools?
I was, yes. It was very nice to do that, because I'm the type of person who needs to like get that feeling and gets to walk around it and see. And I was like, virtual tours aren't going to do it for me. They're not going to cut it.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to walk down the street in the town and see, oh, I can go there for lunch, or I can go mm-hmm. and do this there and all that. That's great. Because to me, some of the kids, some of my friends' kids, you know, they did the virtual tours and, you know, kind of basically had to pick, you know, like you would pick looking at travel photos. Oh yeah, that looks like a nice place to go. I'll go there on vacation. And, you know, that's how they picked their college for the next 4 years.
So. Yeah.
Well, Addison, we're so proud of you, for one, representing NFB. You sound like you are very confident and are ready to speak up, not only for yourself, but for others. And you're doing us all proud. And it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad to have had you. We're so glad to have had you. And we'll look forward to hearing your name again and again, because it sounds like you're going to be doing some great things.
Thank you so much. Thank you much so much for your guys' time. This was an honor.
The pleasure was ours.
We look forward to hopefully seeing you maybe at the state convention this year in Harrisburg.
If I can be there, I most certainly will.
Excellent.
Thank you, Addison. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Our next guest is no stranger to the National Federation of the Blind of Pennsylvania, and she is a big winner at this year's national convention. It's a pleasure to introduce Lizzie Muhammad Park. Lizzie, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Lizzie, it's Lisa, and again, congratulations. What a great honor and what a wonderful representation you are for the Federation and for anyone who has high hopes, but has some struggles, as a lot of us do, of course, in this world of being the blind and visually impaired, which we will get to. We will get to your journey. But why don't you introduce yourself? Give us a little bit of your background. I know you're not in Pennsylvania anymore, but you did originate from Pennsylvania. So tell us a little more about you.
I sure did. I am a Philadelphia girl, born and raised, and eventually I had moved out to the suburbs. And then I went to college at Bryn Mawr College, which is a very small liberal arts women's college, just outside of Philly, like 15 minutes from Philly. And I really enjoyed my time there. I ended up moving to Maryland. But if you ask me, you know, like, what I would tell people about myself, I would definitely describe myself as an educator who loves travel and learning. I'm very passionate about communication. It could be across culture or across, you know, ability or just any demographic. I love communication. I actually run a podcast too for the Performing Arts Division of the NFB. And my future goal is to become a public diplomacy officer.
Okay. What took you to Maryland?
My husband.
Okay. And you've been there how long now?
Almost 3 years.
Okay. All right. So tell us about your journey. Some of it, if people did not hear Lizzie's speech, she shared a bit about her blindness journey and making a very important decision at the ripe young age of 5 years old. Tell us a little bit about that journey, that decision, and then tell us how you came to the NFB.
Yeah, sure. So I have Holt's disease, which means that I had retinal detachment as a part of my journey. And it's really something where, because I could see when I was younger, my family thought that I was sighted, but I really wasn't. It wasn't until I came to the Federation that I realized that I was probably always blind. Like, I was probably always to some level visually impaired, holding things very, very close to my face to be able to see them, different things like that. But I think a lot of people were just sort of in denial about it until I had retinal detachment and needed to get these surgeries. So I received 4 surgeries. I think they tried the right eye first, and then the left eye, and the right eye wasn't working. So they kept trying it with the left eye, left eye, left eye. Keep in mind, this is all like from a 5-year-old's perspective, right? So I think I got them over a year. It was about 4 surgeries within a year. Mm-hmm. I was originally put in school. I went to St. Lucie's. Mm-hmm. So I was originally in school, and then I had to, you know, I was taken out to have, you know, all these operations. I really hated being taken out of school. I was so excited when I was able to start and make friends and, you know, all these different things. So being taken out was a real, it really hurt me. The other thing is, and it's funny because I don't remember this part, but I was just talking to my mom about this, say, I was telling someone else a story and I reviewed it with my mom. And it was maybe like 3 months ago. And she's like, well, you were complaining about the pain. You kept telling me that there was so much pain with this surgery. Mm-hmm. And I had a roommate at one point who said, like, you know, she heard me saying, like, oh, like, just hurt so bad, you know? And my roommate said, well, what surgery did she get? And my mom told her. And she said, oh, she said, that's the surgery I had. And she said, well, what are they? She said, it does hurt a lot. She said, what are they giving her for the pain? And my mom said, Tylenol. And this woman said, are you kidding me? They're giving a baby who had that surgery Tylenol. Mm-hmm. They're giving me morphine, you know, but they obviously couldn't give that to me because I was so young, but she's like, they're giving me morphine and it still hurts. So just like, you can imagine like that intense amount of pain and going through it three times and not really saying anything, pretty much just toughing it out. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we were determined that this was going to work, you know? So after that happened, you know, it was the fourth time. And that was when we had that discussion. And that was when, you know, I told her like, listen, I can't take this anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't do it again. You know, my mom's like, you're strong. You can do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is what needs to be done. And I'm just like, no, like, really, like, this is not going to happen. Like, this is not worth it pretty much. And you know, a little bit of background from my mom's perspective. And I don't even know like if this is like legal or what, but she had to sign a paper saying that she would not sue the hospital for malpractice if I didn't make it out alive, essentially. She couldn't stand signing that paper as a parent. Because to her it wasn't worth that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when I came to her and I had that, you know, that discussion with her, it was a possible warning where she's like, what if the next time is the time that she doesn't make it out? And we've had this talk and I pushed her to do this again. She's like, no, it's not worth it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that was when, you know, and I don't know, like, what all you all remember from this speech? I know David just watched it, just to review, but and that's when I talk about the next section, which is when she talks to my family about it. And my family says, you can't listen to a child. You know, she doesn't know what she's doing. She doesn't know what it means to be blind. You know what I mean? It's not just not being able to see. It's the misconceptions. It's the social aspects. There's more to it. And they're trying to tell my mom, you have to make her do it again. And my mom's like, no, we're not doing this, you know? So yeah, that's the piece about my blindness journey. And I feel like I'm talking a lot.
No, I just a couple of things that you said, you know, and that was the thought that I had last night when you know, when you said, you know, telling your mom as a 5-year-old, and I'm thinking there is no way I would let my child dictate that. But now that you give it more perspective about the surgery, you know, I had a detached retina a few years ago, and it was right before we were going to fly to London, and my retina guy said to me, is it going to be crazy? You know, I every day I woke up, we were in London. Every day I woke up, I opened my eyes and I'm like, whew, I can still see. And again, my vision is not great. It's, you know, it's terrible, but it's better than nothing. And, you know, so the whole time there, I always had that hanging over. And then I had the surgery the day after we got back. And, you know, when you say, I just can't, as a 5-year-old, did you have to, you know, I had the surgery, which was painful, and I could feel them cutting through and they're talking, you know, you could hear, you know, I don't know how it was when, you know, back when you had it, but a few years ago, I was, you know, I could hear everything they're saying, and they're talking about the new Batman movie and Cribs from IKEA and stuff like that. And meanwhile, I'm like groaning because it hurt and nobody's paying attention to me. And that wasn't even the worst part. Was the next week I'm laying on my side because of the, you know, where the gas bubble had to be. And I've heard other people say they had to lay on their stomach or they had, you know, just crazy. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine a 5-year-old having to do that. Is that, so you had to do that?
I did. It was a lot of it. And like I said, I don't remember every little piece of it. They gave me anesthesia, which I was allergic to.
Okay.
And it made me hallucinate. Oh. And I hated it because they were the worst hallucinations. And I won't get into them. I won't get into them too much, but I'm really, really afraid of bugs. Oh. And I would see bugs everywhere. Oh. And if I saw a person in my actual vision, the person would turn into a giant bug. That would happen. It was really, and I was screaming, and they would say, you can't scream, because we're in the hospital, right? They're like, you can't scream. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, are you kidding? Like that. I feel like, honestly, even more than the pain, I think that part was the most traumatic for me. Like, I think that's the part that I remember the most. That was the thing that was like, do I have to do that again? Yeah. Again? Yeah. You know, like, I couldn't stand it. Yeah. But there were some creepy, creepy things I was seeing. And I just said, listen, I'd rather have no vision to ever go through that again. You know what I mean? Right. That was rough.
And now I get that now, you know, now that you say it now. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, and I commend your mom too for mm-hmm. supporting you. I'm sure that wasn't easy for her either. Mm-hmm. But she just had to, I guess, believe that, you know, even at 5 years old, you knew what you could mm-hmm. or you couldn't withstand. Mm-hmm. So tell us, you know, obviously you're not looking back on that as a poor decision because you have managed to live a very productive life. How did you get involved with NFB?
Oh, this is a fun story too. So it's so crazy. Like, I have to be honest about this, right? So when I was younger, you know, there are these stereotypes, like, it's a bad thing to be blind. It's a good thing to be quote unquote visually impaired. Right. Mm. So even though I was total, still am, I would identify as visually impaired because that was the better thing to be. And I didn't like pretend that I could see things that I couldn't see. I just didn't call myself this word that people had this negative connotation with. And then when I got older, so because of that, it really hurt me, honestly, because I wouldn't associate with blind people. Mm. And so, which is kind of crazy because you're like, so how did you come to NFB? Right. So when I was in high school, I wanted a guide dog, and I'll be honest, I wanted a guide dog because my mom wouldn't let me have a pet dog. And and she said, well, you know, if you go to the guide dog school, they teach you how to, you know, do everything with the dog, like, and then it's your responsibility and I don't have to do anything, then fine, you can get a guide dog. So when I was in high school, I was very, like, I was just all about it. I went to this program that the Seeing Eye had for youth. And I hope that they bring it back. It was called SESI, like Seeing Eye Summer for Youth, I think it was called. That's what made me choose the Seeing Eye as the first school where I received my dog from. And I really wanted these guide dogs, but I couldn't ask anyone about it. There were like other things in life. I could ask my older sisters. I have 4 sisters. So I could ask my older sisters, I could ask my cousins, but, you know, I could ask my friends. But in this case, no one knew about guide dogs, you know? So I had to ask blind people. And I think it was meant to be, because when I went to this youth program, I had a really cool roommate. She was in the Federation. I don't know if she still is, but she's from Texas, and she was just so much fun. She's like, oh, you know, like, you know, I just, you know, I like fashion, I like this. And she was just normal. I was like, oh, you're blind, you're normal. Okay. I was like, hey. And then I started to kind of look at myself and I'm like, wait, I'm blind and I'm normal. Like, you know, I was like, we're probably not the only two in the world. So anyways, I started to look into organizations who could tell me more about guide dogs. And I heard that the NFB was having this convention in Orlando. Mm-hmm. What do you know? My family was going to Orlando that summer for vacation. Just happened to be, you know, in matching weeks. And the NACDU meeting was the first night. So I said, hey, mom, can we go to, and it, clearly you see who makes all the decisions in my household. but I said, hey, mom, can we go to the NFB convention? She's like, fine. But we're only going for one day. We're not spending our whole vacation, you know, at this convention thing. Well, the whole family went. I mean, my dad was there, my sisters were there. And so we all, you know, went to go check out convention and, you know, they're talking about my dad's like, wow, like, you know, there, you know, there's blind parents pulling their babies in strollers. And, you know, my sisters are like, hey, there's blind women wearing high heels and they have these long canes. And, you know, so it was just really cool for the whole family to see that. And, you know, I was, you know, I was supposed to be at only the NACDU meeting. Well, I went to the student meeting and, you know, there was like so many different things to do. So I'm bouncing around from place to place. My parents are jumping right in with the UPS volunteers. My sisters are running around doing goodness knows what in the lobby. You know what I mean? So it was just great. And I mean, I definitely did still, you know, go to Disney World and Universal, but I also made sure to pop back into convention throughout the week. So that's how I found the NFB, and, you know, my whole family, we just really fell in love with it. And we, you know, that was, it was the place for me. Yeah. I could really tell. And so ever since then, it was the very next year that I applied for my first NFP scholarship. And that was my first, what I call my first full convention, but my first actual convention was in 2013 in Orlando.
That is a great story. And your family, Lizzie, you sound like you're really blessed to have such a great support. I just want to interject because not everyone that's listening may be familiar with our acronym. So, you know, we speak our own little language. So NADU, can you break down NADU for people who don't know what that is?
If I remember it, National Association of Guide Dog Users.
Right, right. Thank you. Thank you for that. So that was the beginning of your marriage to NFB.
That's right.
And it sounds like you've been active. You started right away in the leadership. You said the next year you started as, you served as the president of the students division.
So the next year was when I got my scholarship. Okay. For national. And then we already had a student division president, so I jumped in as secretary. And then the following year I served as president two terms, so that was a lot of fun. When I was in college, that's what I did.
Wow, great story. So you mentioned before about actually, you know what? I'm sorry. I want to, hopefully David can edit this part out, because there's something else I wanted to, going back to your speech. What really intrigued me, because I did listen to it live that night. And what really intrigued me is when you said that, I think you said your mother first said that this may not be an accident, that you were chosen for this. And it sounded like you believe that as well. Why do you think you were chosen for this? And in what specifically do you think you were chosen for in your journey?
What specifically I was chosen for, I'm still trying to figure that out. but why do I believe that I was chosen for it? So my family is very spiritual, and you'll hear that in my speech as well. Yes. So we're just like very, like, that's just how we are. Like, we just, at first, you know, my family was not on board with it. But when my mom kind of pointed things out and said, things don't happen by mistake. Mm-hmm. We tried this four times. If it was meant to work out, it would have happened one of those times. You know what I mean? She's like, you know, like we could keep trying, but we don't know what's going to happen next. So since, you know, when I came to her and I, you know, had that discussion with her, she's like, that means something. You know, she's like, we just don't believe that things happen by chance. And so anyway, so we were talking about this, you know, this concept of like being chosen. Like, my mom, she always told me that since I was little. She's like, and she really did say that to my family. She's like, you guys don't know what might happen. Like, she's like, I think she's gonna pave the way in some kind of way, or she's gonna help to pave the way. She's like, I don't know how it's gonna happen, but this is for a reason. You know what I mean? So I guess what I mean by that is, when things happen, you almost have to step back from it. And I don't want to say take yourself out of the equation, but you kind of do have to take yourself out of the equation, take your emotions at least out of the equation, and how you feel, and how, I call it what about me syndrome. You know what I mean? And like, oh, but what about me? This is going to affect me because now I can't drive, or now I can't do blah, 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 blah. But it's like, no, it's not what about me. It's not, you know, what you can get out of something. Sometimes it's why am I here?
Right.
You know, why did this happen to me? And not in a negative way, but for me specifically, I'll say, like, it's the way that I love to communicate about things, right? Like, I like using crazy analogies that my husband doesn't like. Like, he hates my analogies, but I like using like really like random, just crazy analogies that help you to get things that maybe you wouldn't have gotten before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't mind discussing difficult or even uncomfortable topics. You know what I mean? Some people are uncomfortable talking about blindness. I don't mind talking about it because, you know, I just don't. I don't really know why I don't mind talking about it. I just don't. You know, it doesn't bother me. You know, it's just these different qualities that I have will make or help people to understand blindness better, I believe. And, you know, the fact that I like going all over the world, like, that's not everybody's thing, you know? And I don't, you know, some people, they're like, oh, like, well, you go everywhere. I don't go anywhere. It's like, well, if it's your thing, then go. And if it's not your thing, then don't worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
But the fact that I like doing those sorts of things and connecting with people across borders and different things like that, is gonna be helpful. You know, I don't know how, I don't know if I'll even see it in my lifetime. But I do believe that everything happens for a reason. And I do believe that sometimes you do have to wonder, like, what is this about? Yeah. What does this mean? You know what I mean?
It sounds like you look at yourself as sort of called to serve.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's very selfless.
that's just one thing that the energy that you bring, just, I saw it in the speech from last weekend, and, you know, I could hear it in your voice now. You're just born to lead. It just sounds like to me, you're energetic. You say the right things, and it's just something that, people want to listen to and hear your story. And I just have to know, because I would love to travel more. This last year and change has just been brutal to
tell me about
to
it.
Sit around. So tell us some of the places you've been in, a favorite place or two.
My favorite place in the whole wide world is Madrid, Spain. Mm. That's where I studied abroad. Okay. And that is where I just felt so free. Things are not perfect over there, but I love, walking up to the bus stop and they have a button, and when you press this button, it'll read out the schedule to you, and the real-time schedule. You know what I mean? Wow. I don't have to pull out my phone and do the whole Google Maps. Oh, wait, they're a little delayed. Maybe they're,
Right, right, right.
It's reading to you exactly what's being read, on that electronic schedule. I also just love the people. Now, blind people in Spain, that's a whole other discussion that could take an hour. So I won't get into that part. But what I will tell you is that they have an organization that's similar to the NFB, but they're the only organization. They're also government run, but their philosophy is very much like an independence forward. It's an independent forward philosophy. And the reason why blind people are so well known is because they'll do different fundraisers and such, and everyone knows someone who knows La Once. And that's their version of the NFB. Mm-hmm. So they also run the only guide dog school in the country. So they do everything, but they do it with a positive philosophy. Mm-hmm. They do it with so because of that, it's not uncommon to see a blind person, because you probably bought a fundraiser ticket from a blind person before, or right. And I mean that, so because it's all under one organization, and because they run everything blindness related, it's really, it's quite common
there, I guess.
It really is.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because, for the last couple of years, I've been investigating places that, my wife and I will eventually move to. And when I looked at Spain, I did find that site, and I was amazed at, I don't remember how many languages. First of all, Spain has, every corner of Spain has, a different language. But I was amazed. English was one of them. I think there were six languages on the website, and the buttons right up at the top, very prominent, which one you wanted. And I was amazed at that. And it seemed so together. Yeah. That I thought, okay, and I want to live, I want to live near the beach. So, Barcelona, Valencia, wherever. South Malaga. so it's funny that you say that. You're very interesting. How about unusual places? Have you been to any unusual?
Oh yeah. So the first place that I ever went to was Thailand. I went there to teach English. And that was when I was right after my freshman year of college. I was there for the summer. It was a lot of fun. And I was in rural Thailand. I was not in Bangkok. I was about 3 hours outside Bangkok. And there was nothing around the school, pretty much. We had a little corner store kind of place. And I liked it there. Everyone knew everyone. It was a lot of fun. I went on a lot of cultural trips and excursions and things like that. They were very kind. So I love Thailand. I hit up London briefly after Thailand, on my way back home. So that was a fun place to be as well. Korea, my husband, his family is from Korea. He's born in California, but his family's from Korea. So I went there to visit them. I went to China to teach English, and that was a lot of fun. It was really interesting. And then of course, when I was in Spain, not of course, but when I was in Spain, the program that I was in, we went to different places, every weekend. So just like when you mentioned Valencia, oh my gosh, I had a guide, my first guide. we were there for what's called Las Fallas. It's the celebration of fire, like fireworks everywhere. They burn everything down. It's like, it's crazy. You know, it's a lot of fun, but definitely don't recommend taking your guide dog there for anyone who's listening. Definitely. That's definitely a cane situation. Mm-hmm. So but it was, that was a lot of fun. That was, you know, one of my weekends where I went. So yeah, I've definitely been to some different places and just always, you know, with an open mind. But the thing that I love about Madrid though, is I feel like in the US, sometimes we have this question, for example, like if, so I want to take ballet, perfect example. I want to take ballet when I was in undergrad because we had a really good dance program at Bryn Mawr. And the question that was asked, and I don't know who's the professor now, so don't jump down my throat. I don't know if it's the same professor, if anyone's listening. But the professor said, well, if she takes this class, who's gonna teach her? Who's gonna help her? It was the question. I'm kind of like, well, you know, you're the professor, you're teaching everyone else. But it was uncomfortable, and it didn't seem like a very like open situation. So I said, like, you know, I'll get around to it later. I never did. And it was just because I did a million and one things in undergrad, a cappella and everything else. So, you know, of course, back writing and whatnot. So I never got back around to it. But when I went to Spain, they had a flamenco dance class, and I wanted to take it. And the thing about it was, in that program, everyone was required to try every class. You don't have to take every class, but try it before you say no. So I was required to try the dance class. And I said, oh, this will be interesting. You know, I wonder how she's going to handle this. And so I just showed up, and we just kind of made it. She and I, we just made it up as we went along. You know, she's like, okay, stand next to me. You know, she's front and center, and I'm front and, you know, to her right. You know what I mean? Okay. And she would, you know, teach everyone the dance, you know, the dance moves. And she would come over to me, and she would, you know, maybe move my shoulders in a certain way, or have me, you know, I would touch her feet, you know, to see what, because flamenco is kind of like tap dance, you move your feet really quickly, and everyone had trouble with it until we all, you know, learned it. But I loved how she handled it, and I wanted to take that dance class. And I asked the director, I said, can I switch one of my classes that I originally had and take this flamenco dance class? And she said, you know, yeah, like, we'll talk to the instructor. And the instructor approached me, and she said, you want to take my class? And I said, yeah. She said, oh, I'd love to have you. And wow. I just, that's the Madrid spirit. You know what I mean? I won't speak for the whole country, because, you know, just like they've mentioned, each region is so different, but that's the Madrid spirit for sure. Yeah. Everywhere you go, it's like that.
So are you fluent in other languages, Lizzie?
Yes, I do speak Spanish. Okay. Because there was a Spanish only rule when I was there. And I started learning Chinese in undergrad. I took it for 2 years, and then I'll pick it back up in my master's program. Mm-hmm. And then I'm learning Korean so that I know when my mother-in-law is talking about me.
and
unfortunately, I won't be able to share this episode with my husband now.
and where are you? Where are you going to take the graduate courses?
At Johns Hopkins. So they have a DC campus, and that's for their international relations school. It's right on Embassy Row. So my classes will be right next door to the Embassy of the Philippines, and across the street from the Embassy of Peru. And it's going to be so cool. I can't wait to start. I'm so excited.
Right. Is that this fall?
It's this fall.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was going to be my next question, is, you know, more specifically about your plans for the scholarship and career goals.
Yeah. So I want to be a foreign service officer, which is just as another word for diplomat, basically going to other countries and connecting with their government leadership. And then, you know, because like the president can't learn every language, he can't learn every culture, you know what I mean? And you know, all these different things, some of them, sure. But for every single country, like, that's a lot, right? You know? So essentially, I would act as the president's liaison to go to these different places and, you know, to have these conversations in a way that, you know, if they say something, I know what they really mean by it. And there's no, you know, there are no wires crossed on my end where I'm unintentionally doing or saying something that's disrespectful to their leadership. So specifically, what a public diplomacy officer does is influences the other country's media, education, like study abroad programs, different things like that. If, for example, if it's a culture show, for example, like showing U.S. culture, I would bring, you know, some of the top U.S. talents to those countries to perform for different people. And, you know, the way that this sort of ties into blindness for me is that you know, who could blame me for slipping in a blind ballerina or, you know what I mean? Right. These different things, you know, into the lineup and sort of showing these things. If it's appropriate, yeah. you know, I definitely would do it, you know, because people would think that it's impossible, but they, you know, they wouldn't know that, yeah, we have blind acrobats, you know what I mean? So, so, you know.
So you would probably relocate in a heartbeat.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the way it works is I would be in a different country for 3 years. Ah. So So each time I go, I'll be away for 3 years, then I'll come back and I'll have a year at home. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I'd be here learning the culture and language and different things like that for the next place that I go to. Once I'm done with my training, mm-hmm. you know, with regard to that, I'll leave for another 3 years, go to that country, come back and do it all over again. Mm.
Wow. So learning a language, I guess that it sounds like that comes fairly easy to you.
I don't know about easy, but it's fun. Okay. I will say I like it.
That is like my head is spinning when you said having to go to a different country every 3 years. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? I've lived two different places my entire life. And that was like enough. But the fact that I'm thinking about moving again, I'm like, oh, but you know, I guess do it while you're young and able to do right. it. And it's something you obviously enjoy.
Definitely.
You seem like you're very comfortable in very different settings, which will bode you very well. And you know, I think you know how to disarm with grace. So even if you find yourself maybe in some more tense or rigid situations, I think you'd be able to soften the room in a very quick heartbeat. So Lizzie, it's been great. David, I don't know if you wanted to hop in with any other questions or if Lizzie, you might want to add anything else.
The only thing I want to ask, you had mentioned at the beginning about the Performing Arts podcast. You want to talk mm-hmm. a little about that and tell people where they could?
Sure. Yeah. So the name of the podcast is called Scene Change, SceneChang. And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, you name it, we're there. And basically what you'll get to hear on there is, you know, I just mentioned blind ballerinas. We have an episode with blind ballerinas where you can go and hear their story and hear how they got started and, you know, different things like that. We've interviewed a blind Cirque du Soleil style acrobat, you know. Wow. Basically, the point of the podcast is to show that we do more than, you know, play the piano and sing songs. But at the same time, we do have musicians on there as well who do all styles of music. And really, you know, have fun with it. And, you know, they talk about stage presence and just life in general. So definitely check us out. Again, it's called Scene Change, SceneChang.
Great. Wonderful. Okay. That is, you know, I like to say that I sing, but there's no one in the world would believe that that's true. Yes, I sing, but that's not what
you
they call it.
You can say it all you want, David. You know? Lizzie, what a delight.
Thank you.
It's been great to have you. Congratulations again. Fine choice on the part of the committee to select you, and looking forward to following the rest of your journey.
Yes, I'm looking forward to keeping in touch. You know, I'm glad that you guys, you know, we're still able to have me, even though I'm not technically in Pennsylvania anymore. Pennsylvania will always have my heart. It's always going to be my home.
Oh, yeah,
so
we can still
thank
claim
you all so much.
Yes. And everybody, you know, everybody in the NFB of Pennsylvania, you know, obviously they know and know of you and, you know, want to know what's going on with you. So now they do. And we really do thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Lizzie. Well, I don't know about you, David, but I feel like they're making me feel like, what am I doing with my life? I mean, Lizzie, she's doing great, great stuff. And Addison is not far behind. I mean, they're both so much of what NFB is about, and that is living your best life, as they say, but in an independent way and showing that, you know, I hate to, you know, overuse the expression, but blindness is truly not what holds you back. I enjoyed talking to both Addison and Lizzie.
Yeah, and both of them, just such high quality and so many things that they do. It'll be interesting to touch base again, and hopefully we can later in the school year with Addison to find out how things are going with her at school and see how that's going and talk about all the things that we didn't talk about with her.
Yeah.
That she does outside of NFB, you know, with her school and, you know, previously with some of the other things that she takes part in. So that'll be great to catch up with her. And of course, obviously, Lizzie is, you know, somebody that hopefully we can touch base with in the future as she's going through for her master's and all the good things that she's about to do.
Yeah. Two great examples of what we are striving to let the world see about the NFB.
Absolutely.
So other stuff we have to talk about. We have a bit of an announcement. You're hearing it first. Believe You Can 2021 will be happening on Saturday, October 16th. It will again be virtual. This is becoming our signature fundraiser for Meet the Blind Month, David.
Yes, and a lot of work goes into it, but it's so much fun to do, and it's so awesome to see all the different talented people that we have. And again, I've been threatening to sing on it. You know, I guess I might have to pass some sort of test to get on that, but but I might have something coming up that will allow you to see why I should or shouldn't be on. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah. So we hope that anyone interested in being a part, being a talent, start thinking about how you would like to participate, whether live or we appreciate the live experience, but start thinking about what you would like to perform for that. I think last year our premiere or I guess our debut was a great success, and we've learned some things from then, so we're only hoping to do an even better job this year, and that will begin with having great talent like you all out there. So remember, this is open to any blind and visually impaired person. We'll be sending out more details about how and deadlines to submit your name and your what you're going to be doing. That will be coming up, but just wanted you to start saving the date, October 16th, 2021.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And I really one day hope that we can do it live on a stage. Obviously, if we do it live on a stage, it would be trouble for somebody out of the Philadelphia area to participate. But again, with the way technology is, we could still have you live at the event if we go that route. Hopefully next year. I was hoping this year, but you know, we're going to have to wait.
Yeah, there's always the hybrid model.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Mm-hmm. And while we're talking about in-person events, I don't want to forget to mention the NFB of Pennsylvania State Convention coming up on November 11th through the 14th out in Harrisburg. All the details are over at nfbp.org/convention. You'll find the agenda there. You'll find all the information you need and a link to register so you can get that in. Again, November 11th through the 14th, and go there, take a look. I know I am planning on going unless some sort of craziness happens. Yes, and it'll be fun. We can do a show there. I have some recording equipment that I just got yesterday, so we'll be able to take it on the road and have that live there. And one last thing before we get out of here is the state raffle tickets. I mentioned them in the last episode. See your chapter or division president and pick up a raffle ticket. The raffle tickets are 3-digit tickets that you pay $5 for. And for the month of October, you have to have the money into your chapter president or division president well before this, so everything gets to the state treasurer before October 1st. But for the month of October, the nighttime daily number drawing, that's the 3-digit number. If your number matches that number, you win. If it's Sunday through Friday, you win $50. And on Saturday, you win $100. Best part of it, you do not have to watch and say, oh, I won, I have to call them and email them or whatever. You just have to sit back. And once the month is over, because you can win more than once, if the number comes up more than once. If your number comes up, you get a check from Brian, the state treasurer, and everybody will be happy because you won and the state won, because it's a great way to raise money for scholarship winners.
Yeah. I am proud to say I am just about out of my ticket, so I'll be turning in my money shortly.
Maybe you should buy a few more to sell some more.
Yeah, they're available. Hint, hint.
So again, so see your NFB chapter president or division president. If you don't know who that is, or you're not a member of the NFB but still want to participate in this, you don't have to be a member of the NFB. You can contact Harriet Goh. And if you need some contact information for her, reach out to us at whitecanesconnect@gmail.com. And we'll put you in touch with Harriet, and you can buy your tickets that way.
Yeah. And one last pitch. We always want to hear from you. Send us your feedback. Send us your pitches. Tell us what your chapter is doing. Tell us about new members, new appointments. Just let us hear from you. This is what this show is. It's White Canes Connect, Pennsylvania style. So let us hear from you.
Lisa, another great show.
Thank you, David. Likewise. Everybody, see you next time.
Thanks for listening.